Who knows more about Munster rugby, me or you, Quinny?
Everyone has an opinion, don't they? Some of the opinions are waffle, but I'd like to think I know a lot.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby Channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on their second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head.
Our performances have just lacked that intensity.
So, the bad, the good and the grand from the weekend sport brought to you 24 hours later than it usually is because of the bank holiday. We will start with the bad as ever on this Tuesday morning. Proposal B and Manchester United in the red. And we're going to start with Proposal B in the red, obviously, because it failed on Saturday. Unsurprising, I think maybe people would have expected a higher number in the 50s, but I don't think the expectation was that it was going to hit 60 and that it was going to come back next year for round two. But I guess why it's in the red this morning is that there's no guarantees of that whatsoever, that it will come back next year and that we will have some sort of second go or second bite of the cherry next year, because we've got to realise why a lot of people rejected Proposal B, and that is because people do not want change in certain areas of the GAA. And I think that maybe the optimistic view is that, you know what, they were rejecting this on the basis that Proposal B wasn't the right sort of change and that a few tweaks, it'll come back stronger next year and everything will be fine. I'm not necessarily sure I'm buying that.
It's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens, right? Because the change that was suggested at the weekend was relatively straightforward. People were complaining about aspects of it. But all of the other changes that have been suggested since involve quite a lot of gymnastics to make sure that the provinces keep their provincial championship centre stage as somehow an accelerant for teams into the All-Ireland Series. It's fair to say that the provincial championships are actually one of the main reasons why Gaelic football is broken, because there's a complete imbalance in the number of games that teams play against each other. So the fact that we're being told, don't worry, change is coming, it's going to come quickly, it's going to be interesting to see where that comes from. Because if you think about, there's an interesting line from Podge Collins about he's disappointed because he felt that everybody was focusing on the flaws of Proposal B as opposed to focusing on the flaws of the status quo, which we've gone back to. So once you start picking apart the status quo, the main problem is actually the provincial championships. But now we're being told that the provincial championships is one of the reasons why this didn't get through. And it's hard to know because there's no qualitative, why did you not vote for this? Oh, this, and this. But in order of these, like, there was no proportional representation here. We didn't get like an option B star, option B one, option B two, B three, B four. Which of these would be acceptable to you? So there's just this morass of reasons why people didn't vote for it. And the next time there's a special congress, there's a strong possibility the constituency goes from 180 to 360, and all of a sudden getting 60% of all those votes. And again, you never know who voted for. We still don't know how Dublin voted, for example, even though the Dublin footballers all came out and said that they were in favour of this, even though, like, I don't know, the self-interest in Mayo and in Galway, and I don't know how Kerry voted in the end. Did Kerry vote no? It seems like the teams who are doing grand at the moment aren't actually as interested in the lower tier counties as you should be as an organisation if you actually believe all the stuff that, as an organisation, the GAA tells itself about, you know, we're about community. Actually, the county representatives seem to be about elitism and seem to be about trying to win just for their team, which, that's all very confusing to me, because it's not actually the representation of what the ethos and, you know, we're Gaels, that thing. But is that right? Are we all? Is everybody there? Or actually, are you just like your town, your parish, your club, your county, and that's it? Because it seemed like the factional interests took over quickly in the debate, and in the end didn't actually win the debate, right? They a majority of people at Congress wanted this proposal, which you all said was, it doesn't make any sense, and still a majority of people actually wanted it. So I'm in two minds. This should be an amber, maybe. There's a case for this to be an amber if you believe the change is coming.
Yeah. But I think that belief. I think you'd have to be very optimistic. I mean, maybe we're just very negative this morning. But like, I think that you made a very important point in the middle there, which was that this was a special Congress in more way than one. It was a COVID Congress, and it allowed for, I guess, the number to get up to beyond 50 because there was just less people to convince, fewer people to convince. And next year will be harder, for sure, when you have that full 300 to 400 people. I think that's a really vital point that maybe was overlooked in the build-up to it, that this was a golden opportunity because of the amount of people actually voting on it. And we know that how much of a barrier the volume of delegates has been in the past to change that would have seemed like good change for the organisation. It's really interesting then as well on the level of the provincial championships that there was a pussyfooting around the failure of the provincial championships over the last couple of years, with the exception of the Ulster Football Championship. The Connacht Football Championship has been grand at its best, but the Leinster and Munster Football Championship have, by and large, for the last 10 years, been very, very bad. And the main reason why football is crap at times, for a long part of the summer, it's the main reason why we will have hurling rather than football on our screens for the vast majority of next year's championship. The fault of that is at the door of the provincial championships. Like, it is their fault why football is bad in the height of summer. And maybe we try to appease the provincial councils a little bit more by saying, oh, no, there will still be importance for the provincial championships when they're moved to the start of the year. But in reality, it should be, well, at least the provincial championships are still happening. At least you are still getting people through the gates, because those are the games that are holding football back from going to the next level, from exploding. And yes, back at that, you could say, well, you can't take away the local rivalries from Gaelic football. The best local rivalries we've had have by and large been between teams of the same standard in these provinces. The Ulster Football Championship has been great because it has been packed with Division 1 teams. The Kerry and Cork rivalry was fantastic when Cork were the second or third best team in the country, aka a Division 1 team. The same goes for the Mayo Galway Roscommon Triangle, and Leinster at the moment generally crap because Meath and Kildare have been yo-yo teams into Division 1. So this all plays into the idea that putting teams together of a similar standard would have been the best way to get the most out of the summer, rather than judging things solely on geography. And yet it seems that we are bowing down to the provincial championships and trying to find a format that makes them happy, rather than facing up to the facts that the provincial championships have held this whole thing back for at least 10 years.
I think it's even longer than that. Like, the qualifiers came in to give people a second chance because it was too many training sessions and too expensive to build inter-county teams up to that end of year, one game knockout, away you go. And then the back door comes in, and the back door actually was the end of the provincial championships being that important, right? It actually was. It was the realisation that these things aren't really fit for purpose, particularly because of the imbalance. Now, because Dublin were in the chaos years in the noughties, that was less pronounced. But once Dublin industrialised the process of finding good players, Leinster has disintegrated. And there was only, Willa Callan is pointing this out, there was only one voice from Leinster, from the floor, that went to Stoop for Proposal B. Even though Proposal B actually would offer all of the counties in Leinster a massive opportunity to jump forward by playing games in the summer. It's like, what are we trying to fix here? Like, I think there's a recognition. Everybody, we all want change. Yeah, we want change. Yeah, definitely. Just don't want this change. Okay, well, you had you could have put somebody forward for the committee, I have no doubt. Everybody in that room would have had the opportunity and the political nous to find a way to recommend somebody to go and sit on John Horan's committee, which went off and took about 18 months to come up with their proposals, looked at everybody's proposals properly, and then put these two forward 18 months ago. And there's been like 3.5 years of time to debate this. So all that stuff from the floor, it was a Donegal were like, oh, we need more time to debate this one. That's a stalling tactic.
Kerry said that as well.
All stalling tactics, because
Donegal made the point that you can't have Division 1 against Division 1 teams against Division 4 teams.
You wouldn't do that in your own competition. It's like, that's exactly what happens in the provincial championships, that you're all desperately trying to protect.
It genuinely feels like the main point against Proposal B, the main reasonable point against Proposal B, was the thing about the sixth team in Division 1. Like, I don't agree with that, but I could see why an inter-county manager like James Horan would say that. I can understand that, but it's like, it seems that if we're actually looking for logical reasons why this didn't pass, then that might actually have been the one. And it is ridiculous to think that that is the one thing that held the whole process up.
It's hard to know. It's very hard to know. Again, I go back to the why did you vote no? Oh, because of this. Okay, well, if we fix this, are you going to vote yes? No. Still going to vote no because actually... And then you chisel away and you get to the real reasons is like actually... Our power block is in this group, and this group have decided that we don't believe that. So, like, we spoke to as many of the provincial councils as we could. We didn't hear from Connacht on the record exactly why they were against it or what the rationale behind it was. But we will now, over the next while. All of those people who voted no are now being tasked with coming up with a better version that somehow manages to solve the problems that we... And to go back to that, the problems are... that teams don't get the same number of games. We have a completely lopsided competition. So to fix it, you need to give everybody at the start of the year the same number of games, ideally against opposition of their own standard, with the opportunity to progress up and down the ranks. You can completely break the teams into three tiers, like every club championship is in the country, and then not give everybody the opportunity to win Sam Maguire. That's fine, but that's not what the players wanted, and I think you've got to listen to the players when it comes to that. But if that's what you're going to do, then go for it. Go for a senior, intermediate, junior, like the women's football is, and let's see what happens. And maybe there is three tiers, and the second tier is the Talton Cup, and the third tier is whatever, and that's the way out of this. But retain a place in the All-Ireland Wildcard Series for the winners of the Provincial Championships, because the winners of the Provincial Championships are going to be Dublin, Kerry, Mayo and Another, who is going to be a Division 1 team anyway. Yeah. That's what's going to happen.
I think two things are going to happen over the next little while. I think first of all, there's going to be a big power play from the provincial councils to try and get more games in the
You see the provincial round robins. Let's have a load of provincial round robins to make sure that all the weak teams. So we're going to bundle the weak teams together in a provincial round robin that's going to not actually then have any bearing on whether or not they make progress in the league, and so ultimately means nothing because it's for the right to get hockeyed at some point.
Hey, this competition is bad, let's have more of this competition. Yes. is essentially the answer there. So I definitely think that is going to happen over the next little while, and people need to be on high alert to that happening, because that is borderline a power grab which just cannot be allowed to happen. It will destroy this thing even further. The second thing that I expect will happen is that when this change does come, because it will happen, I'm not confident it's going to happen next year, maybe even not even the year after, but when this change does happen, this kind of overhaul happens, it will actually look a lot like Proposal B. It will be teams having the same amount of games or guaranteed number of games in the summer months, and a movement in between divisions, which is the centre point of Proposal B. That is 80% of what Proposal B is, whereas the whole argument became focused on the other 20%. Oh, Team 6 doesn't get in. Like, we should have just got that 80% over the line and then worried about the 20%. But no, we got so frustrated and so distracted by the other 20. And probably 20% is probably giving that a generous figure. It's 10% of what it was. Proposal B's thrust was guaranteed games in the summer. And that is what everybody will want when this new change comes in, however it's going to be dressed up.
I think that the fact that this was kind of orphaned, Proposal B was largely orphaned, it didn't have somebody explaining it from the start, meant that anybody who came late to it, which was the majority of people, because this was not being spoken about a month ago, the majority of people woke up to it and they bought the argument that the All-Ireland Series was the All-Ireland Championship. That the knockout was the All-Ireland Championship, which was the most frustrating part for me, because very smart people were like, oh, but they're not in the All-Ireland. But hang on a second. On the first day, the first round of games, every team is in it, and every single moment has consequence for whether or not you are going to qualify. And so therefore, every game is a championship game. So this whole notion that the sixth team or the seventh team or the eighth team weren't in the championship was actually bollocks. It was complete bollocks, because the first round of games is the All-Ireland Series. It's just that it hadn't been marketed properly, it hadn't been explained properly. Nobody actually sat down and went, no, hang on a second. Round one, week one, match day one, that's the All-Ireland Series. So we get to a point where we eradicate all these other teams before we get to the knockout stages. You either qualify or you don't. But you had your opportunity to qualify. You had seven games to qualify. And the other thing is, there's no knockout games. Well, actually, week five of the league becomes a knockout game. Because if you lose, you're out. Or if you lose, you're in a relegation dogfight the next week and you're going to have to win that game which is this, like a second tier championship to try and stay in. But you also have this massive opportunity. 5 out of the 8 teams qualify. It's the best division to be in because you've got a 5/8 chance of qualifying for the knockout stages. That bit never was explained properly. No one championed that. No one explained that. No one explained the weighted likelihood of the team from Division 4 actually, or Division 3. Like, Derry would have been the champions in Division 3 last year in the league. Derry were brilliant.
Yeah,
a real coming force. Even how the wildcard weekend would have been amazing. And if you need to tweak it, so the sixth place team, who, by the way, everybody's going to think sixth place team doesn't deserve to be there because they've lost 4 games. They're going to have a losing record. And you're like, oh, that team with a losing record is the sixth best team in the country. They're actually not.
And also the lack of jeopardy that would have brought to the top tier as well, having
zero jeopardy in there. Completely pointless. It ruins the whole thing.
You either get relegated or you get through. So I didn't understand that either. And it was incredible to... as you said, the smart people who were actually saying that, and maybe that is a failure of how this thing was marketed, and maybe it's just a bad sort of coincidence that John Horan's term was up, and that if he was still there, that maybe there would have been an extra push from him personally, because it seemed that he was in favour of this. And I'm not blaming anybody or anything. Like, in fairness, Larry McCarthy and Tom Ryan came out in favour of this last week. It might have helped that they come out in favour a bit sooner, maybe, and actually thrown their weight behind it, because it did feel that there were a lot of entrenched positions last Wednesday before they'd actually spoken. So
it's very interesting, though. They did come out in favour of change, and they did speak immediately afterwards about how there's now a strong belief in the room that there's time for change. So this president's legacy is going to be getting change for the football championship through in the next... He's got 2 years left. Is it 2 and a bit? Whatever the length of period of time it is. And already... So the GPA, we're going to speak with Tom Parsons a little bit later on. Tom Parsons is saying this needs to be on the CLAR in February, which means that we've got the quiet months of the year, in fairness, to talk to everybody, to listen to their issues, to do that thing that Bertie Hearn said, staring at the wall and letting everybody get their ideas out. Like, I think that has to happen, or it'll be a special CLAR next year, right? And think about it, we catapult forward 12 months, and then it's like, oh, it's too close now to the next season for us to actually get this in, so we'll bring it in for, what year are we talking about then? 2024, at which point another 2 years of prime playing time for some of our best young footballers from counties who are outside the top 5 counties are ruined. And that's the bit that, like...
Yeah, it's frustrating, and those teams that voted against it or gave an open vote or kind of held back a sort of view on this all have let down their players, I think. I think that's fair to say, like, especially some of the players at the top tier. Like, you look along and say the Atlantic coast counties like Mayo, Galway and Kerry, 2 of which voted against it, 1 didn't pose a position. Like, I would say that the players at those 3 counties are pretty disappointed with how they've been represented, which is frustrating from their perspective, to say the very least, because I think all those 3 counties would have stood to benefit from this process next summer, which would have been more games against better opposition in the best time of the year. But look, it's happened now, and maybe there's the fact that it did get over 50% is what we should be looking at and saying, you know what,
everybody wants change, let's get it done.
Yeah,
let's get it done. And that's the challenge now for the administrators, is to get this done quickly and not just sit and say, oh look, we have to give ourselves 12 months, because 12 more months is going to be another provincial championships. And bear in mind, this year the provincial championships is going to be in summertime, and so the best teams are going to hockey the worst teams, and a lot of those worst teams, best players won't play because they'll be like, ah, no one cares about us. So maybe we all forgot about that, and we needed that, and we're all going to remember it a bit more this time. So a reminder, of course, that every week we do the performance rankings and we give you the chance to win a Gillette starter pack. All you got to do to enter is get in touch with your suggestions. Who should be in red? Who should be in green? Who should be in amber? Shout out so far. Jack Carty, green, good. He with Sexton has been our best at half the season. Farrell needs to add him to this November squad as he has experience of the World Cup. We need his age profile. It's good. He's not in our green, but Connacht are. We're going to get there in a minute. Man United in red.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this was a pretty obvious one to fire into red, and it does seem that the mood has changed even more so than just the result at the weekend, because of course there have been bad results under Solskjaer. You definitely think about the Tottenham 6-1 last season, but it does feel that maybe there is a little bit more leaking out of Old Trafford, a little bit more leaking out of the dressing room, and a little bit more of a movement towards this idea that Solskjaer's time as Manchester United boss is up. For two reasons. First of all, because the Antonio Conte camp seem to be pretty happy to consider Manchester United now, assuming he can persuade the board that he won't take over the club and won't run things on a tyrannical level too much. And then there's also what people are saying from within. So there's been a couple of interesting pieces written over the last couple of days. James Ducker in The Telegraph caught my eye anyway. So you've got a situation here where it seems Eric Bailly has been questioning Solskjaer quite a bit, very, very unhappy with how, ahead of the Leicester game, a half-fit defender, a.k.a. Harry Maguire, who'd only trained once, gets in ahead of him.
How'd that work out for Solskjaer as well?
not exactly amazing. There's been one senior player asking why Donny van de Beek has been continuously passed over. I like how there's been a lot of love for van de Beek within the dressing room. Others have questioned why Jesse Lingard has been frozen out and why others such as Nemanja Matic have been used so sparingly when the form of so many regulars has been poor. So there's this sense within the dressing room, it seems, from the leaks that are going to the press, that Solskjaer shows favouritism to certain players. Obviously, picking the same team from Atalanta to Liverpool doesn't help Solskjaer whatsoever in that. So I think that's probably fair criticism, even if it is coming from players with vested interests who want to get onto the pitch. One source said, "You won't find a player who doesn't like Ole on a personal level. He's a nice guy, but we're at a stage where players have lost trust in his tactics and lost trust in his selections." And I'm not sure if you've seen that video that's doing the rounds after one of the Liverpool goals the other day, and he just got Cristiano Ronaldo going like this, doing the classic manager's hand-waving thing, and I'm like, that is a Solskjaer impression. That is your star player taking the piss out of you. Like, that is... Things have started to unravel now on the pitch, where you're starting to see this disconnect between the players and the manager, despite the fact that he's a very, very nice guy. In this Ducker piece, it says Ronaldo's been left alarmed by the dramatic slump in form and the lack of understanding with Mason Greenwood has not gone unnoticed by teammates. Greenwood has been one of United's better performers this season, but Ronaldo has struggled to strike up a rapport with him on the pitch and has been exasperated at times by some of the striker's decision making. Like, to be honest with you, this kind of goes a lot deeper than Solskjaer. I know it's the manager's job and the buck stops with him and it's the easiest thing to change, but like, Ronaldo and Greenwood and Ronaldo being exasperated by the decision making of this kid, like, that's a problem. That'll be a legacy issue for the next manager who comes in. And then the last thing really was just the thing about Solskjaer's tactical acumen, the quality of coaching. And they had worked on a specific plan. They devised a plan that would stop Liverpool. They'd worked specifically on the shape of the team during training during the week. And what followed, as we all know, was one of the most dishevelled, error-strewn performances in United's modern history.
So they had worked on a plan?
Apparently so. And that is...
Was the plan carried out?
Well, therein lies the question, I guess. Because it's unclear from the piece.
Well, it's possible that they did carry out the plan and they got beaten 5-0. It's also possible they didn't carry out the plan and they got beaten 5-0. Do you know, so either way, it's incompetence of the plan or people not following the plan. Not a great look.
No.
The XG was interesting. I mean, not that XG, you should talk about this too much, but like, the XG was 3.6 to 2 point something or other. Like...
Yeah, Liverpool were fortunate to keep a clean sheet. I think that's what it tells us. But that's all it tells us, I think.
Well, if it was 5-3, does everybody go crazy? Because it probably could have been, and nobody would have batted an eyelid. If it was 3-1, nobody bats an eyelid that much. It's just that when things are going against you and you're at the bottom, and I don't know, we'll talk about this a little bit later on with Daniel Harris. This isn't the bottom of the barrel. That's the point, isn't it? That it could actually get much worse over the next few weeks.
Or could have done had Liverpool actually decided to keep playing. And I think Tottenham did something similar last season where it felt it took the foot off the pedal a little bit, where it could have been a lot more. Maybe not, though. Like, I mean, I'm sure all of those Liverpool players would have loved to have inflicted an absolute... destruction. It was a destruction, but like a record scoreline out to Manchester United in terms of a home defeat or in terms of a Premier League defeat. So maybe not, but it did feel that they definitely took their foot off the gas a little bit, because let's face it, 5-0 is an absolutely incredible scoreline anyway. Like, but it's just kind of, you have to drill down deeper than the XG, obviously. And the big thing, and I'm sure people have read plenty about this, is the press. And that is probably the most damning indictment of the manager. Like, if the plan was for your right attacker to press but not your right back to follow up in the press, then that, there's something wrong there. But yeah, in reality, the plan was probably not for that to be the case, and the players were just disconnected a little bit or hadn't worked on it enough over the last little while. But again, you go back a week, you go back to Brendan Rodgers saying, yeah, we knew that they weren't going to press us through the middle, so we just played the ball through the midfield, and away we go. We win 4-2. And yes, that was a very basic way of explaining it, but Manchester United without the ball have got a lot worse than they were last season, and they were coming off a low base from last season. They weren't exactly Manchester City or Liverpool without the ball last season, and this season they've got even worse from that place. And sure, the players are to blame, and Ronaldo maybe was never going to be the sort of player who was going to improve the team on that level, but it's just striking how bad they were on that. And then also the concession of the first goal, and then Harry Maguire bumping into a teammate and just being generally awful as well are kind of the two things you look at and say, right, this really was a low ebb.
The Athletic are this morning kind of reporting that he's going to be given a little bit more time, and that might just be the Spurs game, but they're basically saying that the decision making at Manchester United is so slow, given so many different people are involved, that a quick decision is unlikely to happen. So we'll have plenty of time, I think, to talk about Solskjaer, and certainly a little time more later on in the show. Let's move on. The Ireland's national team in action again tonight. Why are they in amber?
Well, amber mostly to do with the pressure, I would suggest, that's on the team. When you look at and listen to a lot of the players and the way they've been speaking over the last little while, this is obviously a huge campaign for them, and every World Cup qualification campaign is massive. But after not getting to the Euros, there is a level of pressure on this team, given the quality that they have. Now, of course, Sweden are better than the Republic of Ireland. They're the number two team in the world. Nobody expected them to get anything other than to lose last week. And I guess to actually push them quite close to lose as a result of an own goal kind of suggests that they are definitely improving. But now is the time to start getting results. Now is the time to qualify for a tournament and to actually see the likes of Denise O'Sullivan and Katie McCabe play in a tournament, because, I mean, these only come along every so often, and certainly when it comes to the World Cup, maybe this will be the best opportunity to see McCabe and O'Sullivan in their peak at a World Cup as well. So it brings you on to tonight's game, where they need to get a result against Finland. To lose in Finland wouldn't be a good enough result, you'd suspect, at this point. And that's a different sort of pressure. I think the pressure maybe in the last campaign, in an overall sense, was to ensure that results were getting better, to ensure that a team like Germany could represent a couple of staging posts where, okay, from one game to the next, you were going to get better against a tier one nation. Yes, the Ukraine result was desperately disappointing, and essentially it was a game that Ireland should have won, and they should have made it to the Euros. But I think there was maybe, when he zoomed out of it, a little bit of an acceptance that Ireland were going in the right direction. That direction has to result in something tonight, doesn't it? That it has to result in some sort of results. A draw you would absolutely take in Finland at this point. Finland obviously ranked higher than Ireland, so it would be an upset were they to win. But I think this notion that Ireland don't have the players to qualify just doesn't wash anymore. That this team is good enough and needs to show that it's good enough to start qualifying for tournaments.
Yeah, look, I think next summer is going to bring all that into sharp relief when Northern Ireland are at the Euros and we're not, and it's on in England, and it's going to be free to air on the BBC. It's going to be a real, we should have been there. Sorry, I'm just reading this Athletic piece. It's hilarious. Lingard's continued absence, blah blah blah. You saw Lingard giving, I'm not even on the pitch, when he was getting grief from Bai, etc. Additionally, one source said that United did not play many small-sided games at Carrington and raised the idea that Maguire in particular might benefit from such drills to improve his feet in tight situations. This bit's brilliant. The warm-up could certainly use work. During shooting practice ahead of Liverpool, only Ronaldo scored when teed up by Michael Carrick, with a number of players firing off target. When Fernandes gained an early chance, he snatched the shot wide. It's because of the warm-up. The warm-ups are shit, Ollie. What's going on? Ollie's at the wheel with shit warm-ups. I mean, come on.
This is what happens, though. I mean, like, it is like I see one of the headlines in the Telegraph is about like not wanting to shoot Bambi. I think Bambi has been torn limb for limb this morning and thrown under a bus and then beaten with a baseball bat.
United have the chutzpah to shoot Bambi is the headline. Like, is it chutzpah? Is that?
Yeah, Bambi is dead, and it's kind of grim to see, really. I mean, although that being said the leaks that are, well, it's not leaks anymore, it is an absolute massive gaping hole in the Titanic at the moment that is leading to all these stories coming out, but even within them all there is this acceptance that Ollie is a nice guy, and that's the bottom line. He's a nice guy, but
he's going to have a great time back at Molde.
There probably isn't any world in which we see him in the Premier League again, is there?
I can't see anybody giving him a job. Maybe Sunderland. They're always good for something like this, aren't they? It'd be good Sunderland till I die season.
I absolutely would. I think that it'll be the final nail in his coffin would be if Conte does take this team to somewhere high. But like, even next season with a similar squad, if there was a proper title challenge forthcoming from Conte, I think that would be bad reputation damage.
Won't there?
I think, yeah, like I think Conte is just an outstanding manager. Like, what is the main reservation with Conte? Because it does seem that there is, like,
he wants power.
Yeah, like, what's wrong with that?
Well, Manchester United don't have anybody strong enough to say no, and they gave power to Van Gaal and Mourinho as their argument, and they left the club in a terrible situation. Like,
yeah,
Conte might not be brilliant at buying and selling players. He might just be brilliant at
molding a squad,
you know. And see, maybe you don't have to give him the power to buy and sell the players, but is he going to work with Darren Fletcher, who's the technical director? Is that his job, whatever his job title is? I don't know. Like, I can see why. It's just, it doesn't seem like Manchester United have a strategy here, and none of the solutions are actually an answer long term to what the problems at the club are. If people say this goes beyond Solskjaer, and maybe it does, then how do they fix that? They're just caught in this endless cycle of, oh, let's get a manager who is popular, let's get somebody who's famous, let's get a manager who's popular and famous, and it's certainly a compelling spectacle for all of us.
The you're right about the signings. I was kind of like, so the signings at Chelsea were bad. Like, there was a lot of bad signings. Just going through some of them here. Alvaro Morata, £70 million.
Did he make those? Is he, like, do you know what
I mean? This is what I'm wondering. Like, if does power involve him actually?
Was there not Michael Emanuele in with the various technical directors at Chelsea?
Well, exactly. Like, I mean, I don't know for sure. I need to go back and check
and
all
see
that.
Who the timing of it.
Yeah, but like,
definitely that.
But he signed Bakayoko for £40 million. He signed Drinkwater for Chelsea as well. Signed Batshuayi. He did sign. Kante did arrive on his watch. It's saying here David Luiz, Rudiger, Zappa Costa.
Wow.
So of course, like, I mean, if that's his track record and he did have all the power to, you know, say, I want this guy and gave the green light for all that, then that is obviously wrong. But there were way more cooks spoiling that broth at Chelsea, I would have suspected. And I just wonder, what does full control at Manchester United look like? I'm not sure does the manager actually want to be in charge of all those transfer dealings. That is essentially somebody else's job to at least contribute to all of that. And I just think that the overhaul that he would bring to the squad immediately is too good to turn down at this point, considering that the squad that Manchester United have now, is it better than the one Chelsea had a few years ago, 4 years ago? It probably is, but the thing is, the Premier League has just got so much better in the last 4 years as well.
I don't know. So if you add Kante to Hazard,
Kante and Hazard were the two best players. Like, I mean, but like, you look at some of Manchester United's, like, would Ronaldo be better than Diego Costa? Probably, maybe not. Maybe Costa that season is just sensational. But I still think that what you have is maybe an underperforming set of attackers there. Like, Mason Greenwood maybe gets into that Chelsea team. The obvious one is Victor Moses, who he turned into his starting right wing back from nowhere in that squad, and he definitely made players better. So maybe it's not a better squad, but there is definitely a track record from Antonio Conte showing that he can make players better, and that is what Manchester United need right now, or at least to get to some of their parts.
Yeah. All right, let's move on.
Green. We should mention Liverpool after Saturday or Sunday as well, because they were just absolutely sensational for 50 minutes anyway. And when you talk about managers getting the sum of their parts or more than that, I think that's definitely the case with Klopp at the moment, isn't it? Just given, even if you just distill the whole thing down to midfield, they lose Wijnaldum, no Fabinho, Thiago in the starting team, Harvey Elliott gets that really bad injury, and you just look at the likes of James Milner and Naby Keita, and if Keita had the week that he had, would, in a Manchester United shirt, would he have been able to turn it around and say, actually, no, I am good enough to put in a brilliant performance at the weekend? What would James Milner be doing if he was at Manchester United? And if you flip those two managers at the weekend, I mean, does the scoreline get a lot closer? I suspect it would do, and they were absolutely brilliant. And we've spoken so much about Salah over the last little while. I think there's no question right now that he is the best player in the world. And the thing is, when you start talking about him as one of the best players in the world, you just don't have anywhere else left to go. And it's kind of in the longer term conversation that this is where it's going to go over the next little while.
Yeah, exactly. And we can talk about that for months and months and months. We should talk about Connacht also in the green.
Yeah, Connacht were absolutely unbelievable against Ulster at the Aviva Stadium at the weekend. A couple of intercept tries and just perfect timing for someone like Jack Carty, as that commenter mentioned earlier on, getting snubbed once again from the Ireland squad, despite the fact that he played really, really well before the squad was announced, and all of a sudden put in another excellent performance at the weekend. And I don't know, there has to come a point where this just reaches a point where you can't ignore Jack Carty anymore, right?
I don't know.
Maybe you can't. Maybe he's the exact example of the person you absolutely can't ignore, because he has a bad game at the World Cup.
It's a heavy toll that he's paying for that one game when the rest of the team, like, you were at the game. Like, we were good for a short period in that match. The game looked like we were nearly home and hosed. And then was it his crossfield kick that kind of changes it? And is that's like, so I presume it's not just that though. It must be around the squad afterwards, and the form hasn't been this good up to this point. There's definitely like a re-emergence. He's back. But definitely you think, like, wouldn't it be good for everybody to see? We had this conversation with Bernard just a couple of weeks ago. Like, how important is it for the whole squad to feel a little bit on edge that actually my position is not guaranteed? Or is it more important to get all the game time with the players who you think are going to be in your World Cup squad? Because there's not that... Like, I know it's 2 years away, and I know that this is definitely something that we obsess about more than... I don't know, I'm not sure. I'm sure the coaches obsess about it too. But what do you do? Do you work every single second you possibly can on the training pitch with the players who you think are going to be in the World Cup squad? Or do you try and get everybody up to a standard so that no matter what happens with the injuries that are inevitably going to occur, you've got six or seven players who can pop in and out?
Like... So, like, why wouldn't Jack Carty be in the World Cup squad? Like, what is the reason to suggest that this is a temporary, this kind of run of form he's on? Like, he's only 29, so...
It's not an age thing. It's that they believe that the higher ceiling is Carberry and Harry Byrne.
Yeah. And maybe there's truth in that. Like, and definitely when they've shown potential, they've shown it at a younger age, but...
The only thing is that both... The injury profile of both of them has not settled down.
No.
And so there's a good strong chance that Jack Carty is actually in the Rugby World Cup squad on the basis of availability.
Yeah, and the qualities that he brings as well. Is this kind of down as a squad that is kind of starting this World Cup cycle rather than this is kind of like a post-COVID sort of staging post almost, where it's like, this is going to be the squad that we're going to have for the next couple of years. You know, it's T-minus 2 years now, and this is it. This has to be the run-in.
It's hard to know, isn't it? Because Zeebo's in the squad, so I don't know. Is he going to make it to the World Cup? He might not. I mean, obviously Sexton's in the squad. Is he going to make it to the World Cup? You kind of hope so, because we don't have anybody else who's playing as well as he is at 10 at the moment. But again, the injury profile. So it's a high wire act to balance the needs of winning now versus getting people game time and exposure against the best teams.
And even if you distill it down to Sexton in the context of this international window this November, like, I suspect that Sexton gets the best out of himself when he does have somebody breathing down his neck. And just for this window, I think Carty's form is so good where that actually would be the situation, where, like, Carty, form-wise, is the best out half in the country right now, and he's not in the squad. And maybe you can make an argument that at the very least he should be in the squad just to have Sexton looking over his shoulder a little bit. And maybe that wouldn't be the long-term thing. Maybe come to Six Nations, Byrne and Carberry absolutely proved themselves by then that they are going to be the two guys who are going to be pushing Sexton come the World Cup.
There's not that many games.
But there isn't. But you got to push Sexton now. I mean, let's just get him into that maybe a little bit of an uncomfortable position within the squad, because I'm sure he thrives under that.
And Carberry and Byrne likewise. So I can definitely see the argument for it. But Connacht... I think you could have put Connacht in the amber here. One bit is that we just need to see this week after week after week. Like, the ability to absolutely annihilate Ulster, who'd been going well, is brilliant. And it's really, really important that Connacht continue to make the progress. But they look like they've got a great coaching ticket. They look like they've got great recruitment. Things are going well there.
Like, it was back-to-back good weeks, you have to say, though, because, I mean, on a different day, they come away from Thomond Park with the win the previous week, and I don't, like, you can't put that defeat down to a bad performance from Connacht. So I think they have backed up in back-to-back games. Obviously the result before that was hugely disappointing from Connacht's perspective. Andy Friend said they overtrained during the week. Maybe that doesn't happen again later on in the year, but this is a turn up for the books, that results, like the magnitude of the win, Ulster being spoken about as potentially making that step forward this season as well. I know Andrew Trimble was on Monday Night Rugby with Joe a couple of weeks ago making that point. Like, fair enough, he was cautious as well, saying we got to actually wait until March or April next year to actually see where this team ends up, but the early signs are really good, and Connacht took those early signs and absolutely destroyed them. So it was a remarkable result at the weekend, and Connacht, you have to say at this point, are going in the right direction, even though they do need to do it 3 weeks in a row now at this point.
All right. One quick shout out for the competition. If you want to be involved in the competition, you can enter on any of our platforms. Just tell us who you think should be in the performance rankings this week. Kenny the Dad says, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer needs our support. We all need to get behind and support him. He'll never walk alone. So I see what you're doing there, Kenny. But look, if you want to stick him in the green, stick him in the green. Doesn't really matter to us. Every week we'll give you the chance to win a Gillette starter pack. All you got to do to enter is get in touch with your suggestions. That's this week's performance rankings.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.